Okie dokie dokie dokie. Well, from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, you know what it is? It's People Pleaser. Hi, everybody. We're live on TikTok right now. You saw. You clicked on the episode. You saw that it was a mini-sode. It's a mini-sode, and I'm live on TikTok, and I'm chatting to all of you in the podcast world. If you're just listening to this on a Thursday, how are you? How are you doing? I hope you're doing well. We're recording this on September 12th, 2001, 20 years and one day after September 11th, 2000, or I said 2001 at the beginning, 2021, it's 2021 right now, 20 years and a day after 9/11. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the episode. Actually, we'll talk a lot more about that in the episode, but before we do, let's do a couple shout outs here. First of all, I want to shout out my Patreon patrons. Some of them are here in the chat on TikTok. Hi, you guys. I love you so much. Thank you so much for being part of the Patreon. If you want to join the Patreon, patreon.com/AustinArcher, you can get on there and support the content, the TikTok content, the Twitter content, the YouTube content, the podcast content that you're listening to right now, patreon.com/AustinArcher. I love my patrons. Thank you all so much for supporting. If you want to support and if you have the means, please consider doing that. We would love to have you. And before we get into the topic, again, I want to do another thing here, one of our favorite segments on the show. It's review the review. This is where, if you want to participate in this segment of the show, you can go over to Apple Podcasts and give this show a 5-star review and write a review for this show, and I will read your review on the show and review your review back to you. Does that make sense? So you go on Apple Podcasts, you give the show 5 stars, you write a review, I read the review on the show, and I talk about the review, I review it back. So here we go, review the review. We got a bunch of new ones. I'm just going to read a couple. This is from Ginger Grant, who gave the show a 5-star rating. You got to do that. And the review is called Heart. Infused with heart, struggle, frustration, and a desire to learn more and do better. That's the review. That's the whole review. I like this review a lot. And here's why I like this review. Because it actually tells me that I'm making the kind of show that I set out to make. When I first started recording People Pleaser, the idea behind this show is that you, the audience, were going to be listening to me working through ideas in real time. That it wasn't like I'm coming in with a fully formed idea on something. I'm working it out. You're listening to me and my guest work it out. You know, oftentimes my guest will come in with a really strong point of view on something, and I'm just trying to, like, learn from them. So the show is called People Pleaser. It's about people pleasing is one of my big character defects. It's a thing that is a problem for me, trying to people please and trying to, you know, so it's sort of me working through my character defects and working through my thoughts on different things. That's why there's a different topic every week. It's so I like that she says in this review, struggle, frustration, and a desire to learn more and do better. That the fact that that comes through almost 2 years later, we're almost 2 years into this podcast, and the fact that that's coming through for people makes me happy. So I like that review. Thanks for leaving it. We'll read one more here. This is from SSam754, who says, rock solid podcast. This podcast makes me feel smarter, faster, and stronger each week. Austin is a funny and super intelligent guy who consistently puts out great content on all his platforms. Try out his insightful podcast. You won't regret it. That's really nice. There's a lot of nice compliments in there, but I particularly like the part of this review where they say feel smarter, faster, and stronger. I like the idea that, like, listening to a podcast, you're like, I think my legs are stronger. I think after listening to that podcast, I can now squat 350 is what I think. I think now that I listen to that podcast, I can run a 4.5 40 is what I think. I think I'm significantly faster having now listened to Sam Harris talk about that idea. That made me faster. My mile time, I just shaved 2 minutes off my mile time from listening to that podcast. It made me a stronger and faster person and smarter, to be honest. To be actually honest, I'm smarter, stronger, and faster now from having listened to that podcast. So I like those. You can join Review the Review go over to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating and a review, and I'll read your review on the show and read it. Let's jump into the topic this week. I decided to do a mini-sode just because of the date that it is that we're marking, September 12th. You know, yesterday in New York City, of course, they had the two big pillars of light shining up into the sky, commemorating, of course, the thing that happened 20 years ago. I want to preface what I'm about to say and be really clear that I understand and have empathy and compassion and respect for people's desire to be somber about this date, to address it with a certain severity and solemnness, to look back at it and memorialize it as a day to remember people who stepped up and were selfless and put their lives on the line to save strangers from catastrophe. I want to be really, really clear before I talk about this that I'm not saying this in any way to diminish the weight and the gravity of that event in any way. But I wrote a tweet about this today, and then I made a video about it on TikTok. Because watching people's Instagram stories and tweets and stuff coming out, you know, people who, you know, I pay attention to what people are putting on their Instagram story. I pay attention that if you're the kind of person who over the last 18 months, I've never seen you post about COVID once. I've never seen you post about, you know, trying to encourage your friends and family to wear a mask. I never see you post about racial justice, like when police brutality occurs. And I never see you post about that. I never see you post about, you know, issues that are affecting the world. And I take notice of that, and it's fine. It's like your social media is yours to post what you want to post about. But then, you know, on the 20-year anniversary of 9/11, you've got this really like somber, emotional post where you're like, I'll never forget where I was. I'll never forget the way it felt watching that on TV. I'll never forget the gravity of that. And I am not taking away that you probably feel genuinely that that day is a significant day in the history of your life, and that when it's commemorated, especially on something like the 20-year anniversary, you feel compelled, you feel emotional remembering it, and you want to state once again your gratitude for the heroism that you saw, the selflessness, and you want to reflect on that. And I respect that. Again, I find it, it irks me. I am irked when I see those people saying that stuff, because I just can't help but think, where's this energy right now, currently? What does remembering this traumatic event from 20 years ago and memorializing the heroics that you saw on TV, what does that do for you now? How does that show up in your life currently? What are you doing to pay it forward and to show that you want the lives that were lost, that the firefighters who went and climbed hundreds of flights of stairs, that you want to show that you, how are you honoring their memory? Other than, you know, once a year posting about it on social media and saying, like, I remember this. I remember this thing that happened. What are you doing in your personal life to sort of show up in a way that says, I remember this and I want to live my life in a way that commemorates and memorializes this? Because personally, if I see you saying once a year that you will never forget this thing, but I also see you seeming to be more or less ambivalent about the 4.5 million people who have died across the world from a preventable illness over the last 18 months, I'm irked. I can't help but think, where's your energy? Where's your energy for watching the police murder an unarmed black person on camera for the 100th time? Where's that energy? I want to see that energy. I want to see you getting on there going, I'll never forget the way I felt when the first time I watched the George Floyd video. I'll never forget the way I felt the first time I watched the Philando Castile video. Because no doubt, No question, it was a traumatic experience to be, I was 13, maybe 14 years old. We spent the entire day at school watching that footage of those buildings. It's still seeing those images, seeing the images of those buildings on fire, seeing the massive clouds of smoke come down the street, people covered head to toe in soot. It's still harrowing. But I felt the same way watching the world shut down 18 months ago. I remember where I was as the NBA shut down and realizing this doesn't happen. The National Basketball Association doesn't stop. The world doesn't stop like this. Broadway doesn't close. Disneyland doesn't close. And watching that all happen in the course of a few days, watching famous people getting sick and dying, and watching it just start spreading like wildfire, watching tents go up in Central Park because they had run out of space to store bodies, putting bodies in the back of freezer trucks. The imagery from 9/11 was no doubt traumatic, was no doubt harrowing, and is seared in all of our collective memories. I feel very similarly about the imagery that we've seen on the news over the last 18 months. And I feel like it's so bizarre how so many people have been so good at tuning it out or at pretending like they're not seeing it. And that those of us who are seeing it are being overly dramatic. I mean, we're being gaslighted at every turn that we're blowing this thing out of proportion, that it's really not as bad as we think it is, that there's a 99% survival rate. There's not. People always like to say, like, there's a 99.9% survival rate. There's like a 98% survival rate. And in percentages, when you're talking about billions of people, every decimal point is significant. Being off by a few decimal points is significant. We're talking about millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people, you know? When we're exaggerating by a decimal point or two. Also, turning hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people into percentages is a particularly callous and heartless way to address an international tragedy like the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, there's a few reasons why I think people do this. Because in the 20 years since 9/11, we've gotten really good at sort of mythologizing what happened in those first few months, years. We've sort of mythologized it to this thing of like, it was a day where we all united under one banner and we all said, today, there are no lines that divide us. Today, politics doesn't matter. Today, race doesn't matter. Today, religion doesn't matter. We are one people. That's sort of the mythology that you hear around that day now. And that's just not true. It's just not how it went down. We were very divided. We were divided over whether or not it was the right thing to go to war. We were divided over whether or not it was right to be extraordinarily racist toward anyone who looked like they could be from the Middle East or looked like they could be of Muslim persuasion or descent. There were people who thought that was a totally reasonable response, that we should be skeptical of anyone who looks like they could be from the Middle East that we see at the airport or out in public, that we should be allowed to go and deface mosques, that we've earned that because of this. We were not united on that. There was a division of people who thought that that was the wrong response and people who thought that that was a totally reasonable response. We sort of mythologize this thing later and go, no, we all came together. We all came together under one banner and we all felt the same way about it. But I've been thinking about this. Why do we respond to, how do people respond to massive traumatic events like this? And you can even, I mean, think about Pearl Harbor. You know, the story, the mythologized story is we all came together. It was the thing that galvanized us to get involved in the war effort and to go save the day. And to put millions of Asian Americans in internment camps. Just leave that part out of the story, you know? Just leave the part out of the story where we, like, did the thing that the people we were going to fight were doing. Now, okay, I digress. Why do we respond this way to traumatic events? Why do we respond in this way where we, I mean, so even 9/11, it's like you look at the COVID response and there is this division over whether or not we should accept that this is a thing that's happening and that requires all of us to get behind it and all of our effort. Should we accept that this is a thing that's going to require sacrifice from all of us, that's going to require sacrifice of some personal comforts and freedoms, and that we all just need to get behind it and everyone just needs to do their part so that we can get through this and save lives? It seems simple enough, but that there's this division because there's a lot of people who feel like the entire thing was some kind of smoke and mirrors hoax. The same thing happened for 9/11. And I can say this as, and I'm going to be real honest with y'all here, as a person who watched Loose Change in 2002-ish. Remember Loose Change, that documentary that came out on YouTube that a bunch of people watched and it made them think that 9/11 was an inside job because it showed us all that there's no way that a building can fall straight down if it's been hit at the top. And it's, you know, compelling stuff. It's interesting stuff. You know, looking at the damage at the Pentagon and thinking, I'm not sure if a 747 could be in that rubble and could vaporize like that. You know, jet fuel doesn't melt steel, all that stuff. Now, granted, I was 14 or 15 when that documentary came out and I was sucked in by it. It was enticing. Now, what makes us go for that stuff? I've been thinking about this, and I think that there is a collective response sometimes to big traumatic events like this, where instead of accepting the actual reality of what's happening, there tends to be this response that's like, well, that can't be it. That can't possibly be it. That thing that I'm looking at right now, that's right in front of my face, that can't possibly be it. And also reckoning with the fact that the actual reality of events like 9/11 and events like Pearl Harbor and events like the COVID-19 pandemic, the actual reality is that our behavior as a species, as a country, as a people, usually has something to do with it. Absolving ourselves from responsibility in 9/11 and saying, you know, no, it was the government. The government was trying to go get oil, so they wanted to scare us all, do a false flag procedure, you know. But ignoring the fact that, like, could it be that there's any culpability on the part of the American people and the American government with the way, in regards to the way that we had been treating the areas from which these, you know, the terrorists came from, the quote unquote terrorists, you know, where they came from. Same thing with COVID-19. Environmentalists and people who have been trying to fight climate change have been warning for decades that our practices, our industrial practices, moving into territories where we're not supposed to be, pushing our industries into more and more uncharted areas, was going to give rise to more and more viruses and pandemics. This has been predicted for a long time, that our behavior was going to lead to something like this. And then when it happens, rather than reckoning with the fact that, like, we all were warned about this and we decided not to do anything about it, we come up with stories about how it's some nefarious shadow organization. And, you know, to be fair, it's like the average person doesn't have much to do with it. The average person's like, I'm not the one chopping down trees in these areas. I'm not the one going and cutting up bats and creating wet markets. And, like, I'm not doing that. And yeah, there's a lot of innocent collateral damage in these scenarios. So it can feel like what we want to do is we want to find an external bad guy, an external nefarious shadow organization to put the blame on, so that we don't have to look inward and see if there's any way that maybe my behavior or our behavior societally is contributing to these problems happening. It's easier to kind of come up with some story that's like some really extravagant, detailed story than to just sort of look inward and go, oh, you know what? Maybe our behavior is creating stuff like this. I don't know. It's just interesting. It's interesting the way that we respond to trauma. I wonder, and I'm almost certain that in, you know, in 10, 15 years, if we'll look back at the COVID-19 pandemic, in 20 years, if we'll look back and go, I just remember all those hospital workers, those brave people who put their lives on the line. And if we'll have people, you know, saying, you know, this day makes me proud to be an American and stuff. And if we'll sort of rewrite the history books again and pretend like half of us weren't actively denying that it was even happening while it was happening. Yeah, I don't know. Those are my thoughts on this. I want to turn it over to you guys. I want to go into the comments section. I've talked a lot. That's sort of my thoughts is 20 years later, after a very traumatic event, many Americans still are incapable of talking about it without some kind of weight or solemnity. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't, but it's weird to be in the middle of an international disaster, a catastrophe, and have people sort of not sharing that same energy for something that's just objectively killed exponentially more people. So what are your thoughts on this? What are your thoughts on the way that societies respond to trauma and the way that we tend to sort of rewrite the history books as time rolls on? Why do we do that, do you think? Why do people do that? Why do we come up with stories that make it seem more, to make it seem more palatable? Like what are we trying to do when we sort of divorce ourselves from the reality that's right in front of our faces? So this is an interesting take. Me, Jason, says they wanted intentionally to make it worse because it would affect cities more than rural areas, you know, democratic cities. They wanted us to die. So yeah, I'm not going to say that that's not maybe a view that some people had where they thought, well, if it's spreading in cities, then let's let it happen. But again, I'm like, I'm not sure that that's not just part of the same thing. And I understand that viewpoint, but I'm not sure that that's, you might just be doing the same thing where you're thinking, now the reason why Republicans and conservatives don't want to believe in the pandemic is because they want to kill us. I don't know that it's necessarily that nefarious. I think it might be attached to the same mechanism that people had when they were denying 9/11. It's more about just being like, I don't want to be attached to the reality of this or to the possibility that I could be culpable for this in any way, shape, or form. I want to completely divorce myself from any personal responsibility and say that it's everyone's fault but mine, that it's big pharma, it's the doctors are lying, that they're inflating the numbers, whatever it is, whatever I have to say so that I don't have to look inward or take any personal accountability in this situation. I think it might be more that than it is I want to kill Democrats, because I think that coming up with a theory like that is sort of doing the same thing. It's sort of being like, well, it's not my fault. I did everything that I was supposed to do. They were being nefarious. I don't necessarily think that people operate from this place of like, ooh, I know how we'll kill the most people. I think that a lot of this stuff is like accidental. It's sort of like bungled, like history. Like the American government was bungling the situation in the Middle East for decades, was just handling it very poorly, and was just sort of going in and messing around with stuff they had no business messing around with. Maybe trying to help out, maybe trying to shift the gears in their favor, and they unwittingly created a disaster that got innocent people killed. But I don't necessarily think that it's like, I don't think it's as calculated and as planned out with mustache twisting and people in dark rooms go, you know, doing evil laughs. I think it's more like just kind of stupidity. And there are people in the world who are trying to warn of this stuff and trying to show world leaders about these patterns and explain why this stuff could be potentially dangerous. Rosewood says, is that why conspiracy theories have become so popular? It allows people to attach narratives to an event, makes life seem more like a movie. Well, first of all, I don't think that conspiracy theories have become more popular. I think that conspiracy theories have been popular, at least in my lifetime they have been. And I know since before my lifetime, I know that everyone's always loved a good conspiracy theory. And I do think that that's part of it. I do think that it makes things more interesting, makes it seem more like a movie. I think what makes things seem more like a movie is clear-cut bad guys. Really clear-cut good and evil. Clear, these guys were doing bad stuff, and these guys were trying to stop them by doing good stuff. And the truth is usually more complex than that. What's interesting, though, is usually the real narrative is still fascinating. The real narrative is still, like, it's really fascinating how stuff like this actually happens. That's why, like, I think that this commission that the Biden administration is trying to do to actually investigate where did the coronavirus come from and just try to get to the bottom of that is fascinating. It will be interesting to learn. Did it come out of a lab? And if it did come out of a lab, my feeling is that the more likely scenario is that it was a lab that was studying SARS coronaviruses, novel coronaviruses, because of the SARS epidemic that happened in China, and they were studying these viruses, and there was an accidental outbreak of one of these. I could see that happening. I think that's a more likely scenario than it was an intentional planned thing. Again, the intentional planned thing, I think, is more interesting to people because it has clear-cut villains with clear-cut nefarious intent. And the other thing is just more human. It's like this human error, like in the pursuit of trying to do something helpful, we accidentally triggered a catastrophe, and not wanting to be found out, this government, like the Chinese government, potentially orchestrated a massive cover-up of it. That's an interesting story. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm saying getting to the bottom of what actually happened, I think, is often just as interesting, if not more interesting. It's more complicated. It's more nuanced. I like this take. Oli Major says, conspiracy theories also make people feel like they're part of an in-group. I think that's interesting, too. The feeling that you know something that other people don't, that you're smarter than other people, that you've figured something out that other people are blind to, that you're awake. You see this a lot. I mean, you see this a lot on people who are COVID deniers and people who are big Trump supporters and big conspiracy theorists, Q people. If you look at their bios, I mean, it's always like, truth teller, like bringer of light. If don't come here if you can't handle the truth. The truth is spoken here. Only like if you want the truth, this is where the truth is. I think people like the idea that they're on to something, that they're peeling back the curtain and seeing the mechanism of what's actually going on. I think that is it's flattering to the ego, and it makes you feel like you're doing something important. Again, what's really interesting is that actually figuring out what's going on is also important work. Actually being curious about the minutiae and the nuance of these events, because the more likely scenario is that something like a global pandemic was probably a domino effect of several different things that several people and organizations were doing without realizing that they were affecting each other. Kind of like, How does a 9/11 happen? And the real answer is that it's like, well, it's several things over several decades that are hitting each other. Domino hits that the people hitting the domino aren't even aware that they're pushing a domino into something else that's going to hit something else. And if you track it back, it's still an interesting story, but it's not as clean cut. And it doesn't make the person who figures it out feel really smart. And that's the other thing, too, is like, anti-COVID people, anti-vaccine people, anti-mask people, a lot of their narratives are really simple. They're really, really simplified. It's like really, really like clear, like check it out. All these billionaire owners of all these major corporations pulled the money out of their companies months before COVID came. So we've got this really clear-cut narrative of like this shadow organization of rich CEOs having something to do with like money and their stocks because they got a tip about COVID or something, which means that they created it or something. But it's hard because if you try to get into the details of their story, the more that you try to like really nail down the details, the more ridiculous the story becomes and the more far-fetched the story becomes. I think in the abstract, these stories are intriguing and interesting. But the more that you try to like hone in on it, the more ludicrous it becomes. It's kind of like the moon landing conspiracy. It's like in the abstract, the idea that we would stage a moon landing to beat the Russians in a space race makes some sense that there was a Cold War going on and that we wanted to win this technological race that we were in. And rather, we just figured we couldn't actually do it, so we just staged a hoax. And in the abstract, it sounds plausible. And in the abstract, it's an interesting idea. When you try to nail down more details and you try to nail down how the mechanics of this hoax actually worked, it starts becoming more and more obscene and absurd, because we're now talking about thousands of employees. We're talking about, and like to this day, all of the people who have ever worked for NASA would have to be in on this, because the thing is you can go talk to a NASA rocket scientist today and they can explain to you exactly how those rockets worked, how the lunar lander worked, and exactly how the physics and the science behind that mission. And they can explain to you, yeah, it's crazy that we did that, but here's how we did it. And it's kind of like how you can go to a doctor right now and say, like, explain to me how an mRNA vaccine works. And they can explain it. They can explain exactly what's in it and exactly how it works. But like, the problem is the lay person is probably not going to understand that stuff. It's too complicated. The actual story it goes right over the lay person's head. So when a rocket scientist, when a NASA scientist explains to you how that mission was accomplished, the average person's like, what? I mean, you could be lying for all I know, because I literally don't know anything about what you're saying. Everything you're saying is gibberish to me. So you literally could just be spewing technobabble at me and I wouldn't know. But the point is, like, they do know. The math works. And people have checked it. And in order for their math to be wrong and for them to all be lying, like, someone would have found that out. Someone would have run the numbers. Someone would have run the calculations and been like, oh, none of this adds up. They were just lying, you know? But it's been checked and rechecked, and the thing is as crazy as that story is, it seems like we went to the moon. It seems like the actual story, even though the actual story is more complicated, because it's like crazy math and ingenuity and physics and engineering that went into that. The conspiracy story in the abstract is entertaining and plausible, but when you try to nail down the details of it, it becomes more and more ridiculous. Me, Jason says, I'm honestly unsure of 9/11. In the same vein, it makes sense they allowed it to happen. Look, I'm not going to say that there's not a possibility that there's something going on that we don't know. In almost everything that involves foreign relations and diplomatic affairs, I think it's almost a certainty that there is classified information surrounding all of that stuff. But I think that more or less what happened is what happened. And a few reasons for that is, like, just that the people who did it said they did it. You know what I mean? The people who did it said they did it. And hey, maybe the government knew they were going to do it and then let it happen. I don't know. That's kind of stuff that's in the abstract unknowable. But I'm more interested in, like, how we start building these alternative stories and why we do that. What is it about seeing something like that causes us to need to come up with an alternative story? And I think that there is some kind of trauma response there where, like, we want someone to be clearly at fault. We want a simpler narrative. We want something that feels more digestible. Me Jason says again, if they'd stop lying, it might lessen these conspiracies. Possibly. I get that. I've heard people say that they're like, well, every time we hear about some declassified thing where we realize, oh, they were lying to us about this, that, or the other thing, it gives rise to more conspiracies and more government distrust. I understand that. Just like I understand how, like, people in like the Black community have a justified distrust of vaccination because of the history there. You know, I understand how institutions and organizations can fail communities and can sow distrust through acts of deception. What are the what's the potential harm that can be done by people coming up with their own stories, especially if it's something where we're like, well, none of us actually really knows where COVID-19 really comes from. None of us actually knows. So what's the harm in theorizing or in coming up with a story? I think with this particular instance, we are seeing that the harm can be that we're having a very hard time getting the cooperation of a significant portion of the population when it comes to slowing the spread and taking measures to get out of the pandemic, you know? Vala Amaris says, blind obedience is never a good thing. I agree. I think that describing wearing a mask and social distancing and getting a vaccine as blind obedience is a mischaracterization of what's going on with this pandemic. I think too many people are describing it as blind obedience, that my leaders told me to, so I do so. And I don't think that's actually what's going on. I think that people are taking into account what they've witnessed, taking into account the fact that they have witnessed firsthand their friends and family get sick with this illness, people that they know dying of it, watching the death toll just skyrocket on the news night after night after night, looking at the tents in Central Park, looking at bodies getting loaded into freezer trucks. I think that people are taking into account the fact that they have seen what is going on, listening to the accounts from healthcare workers and believing them when they tell us that we have never seen anything like this, that we are overwhelmed. And then listening and believing healthcare workers when they say, since the vaccine has come out, our ICUs are overwhelmingly flooded with unvaccinated people. I think there's a big difference between taking all of that into account and then making a decision to get vaccinated and wear a mask and social distance and just saying, well, Joe Biden says so, so I guess I will. I think it's a pretty gross mischaracterization of what's happening to say that people are just engaging in blind obedience. Yeah, Bonita Peanut says, look at the states that wear them versus the ones that don't, states with high vax rates versus those without and with low vax rates. Idaho. I drove through several states last fall on a road trip with some friends, and one of the states we drove through was Idaho, and Idaho was by far the worst state we drove through in regards to COVID. We would walk into a little shop to get a water or a soda while stopping to fuel up on gas. And the looks we got from people for wearing masks, I thought we were going to have people throw down and fight us right there in the store. Idaho is the state where people were holding mask burning rallies. Idaho pretty much from the beginning of the pandemic said, fuck no to masks and social distancing. And they've got about a 30% vaccination rate right now. And they are just overwhelmed in their hospitals, just completely overwhelmed. And you look at these states, Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, look at these states with low vaccination. I mean, you can take into account the data that is coming out. You can believe healthcare workers when they tell you what they're seeing. You can believe people, the accounts of actual people who are anti-vaxxers, who were adamant that this was a conspiracy, that it was being blown out of proportion, that it was all about government control, and the next thing you know, they're on a ventilator and they're tweeting from a ventilator because they can't talk anymore, or they're posting on Facebook, oh my God, I was wrong. I'm so embarrassed. I was wrong. And then the next thing you know, you're looking at their obituary. Just case after case after case after case. The ironic thing is, earlier in the chat, someone said they theorized that maybe conservatives didn't care about COVID because they figured it would disproportionately affect cities and take out more Democrats. And the ironic thing is that metropolitan areas and cities have had a more robust response to COVID. Places like New York City had a more robust lockdown and were stricter about mask wearing and social distancing and were really, really fast to get vaccinated as soon as vaccines were available. And the ironic thing is that those areas are doing so much better. So much better. A few weeks ago, I had Dr. Eric B. on my podcast, and he's a doctor in New York. And I was saying, are you guys just getting hit so hard right now with this second wave? And he goes, well, no, we're actually doing okay. It's other places. It's places like Missouri and Mississippi and rural areas that are getting hit really hard. So if that is true, I don't know. But if that is true, that the theory was, let's let the metropolitan areas get it the worst. The ironic twist of fate there is that that's not how it's going down. In England, so Phantom Phil says, in England, they just banned COVID passports. People aren't shopping at places with mandates. Yeah, fine. That's fine. I wish that governments would have more backbone when it comes to this stuff. It's weird. I'll say this. This is going to blow some minds right now. Hot take, wild thing that I'm about to say. It's a little bit disappointing that the Trump administration seemed to have more resolve and backbone when it came to locking down and shutting down and giving, you know, making sure that people had stimulus checks and stimulus pay so that we could do that, and really making sure that there was like a feasible way to do that, than the Biden administration has had so far. I've been pretty disappointed that the Biden administration came in and that there was this idea that we were all going to get vaccinated and that we were going to have this vaccine passport. That's why we all got it. We all got this vaccine passport that doesn't fit in our wallets. And the idea was that we, like, you were going to have to show that to fly on planes and to get into certain businesses and stuff like that. And we just really chickened out on that. And that's a failure from the top down. Like, everyone just decided that we were, like, too afraid of losing business. But it's weird because during the start of the pandemic in 2020, businesses were totally fine with telling people you can't come in without a mask on. And if the people wanted to throw a tantrum and say, I'm never shopping here ever again, they went, fine, fuck off. Like, you don't ever have to shop here ever again. That's fine. You can't come in here without a mask on. It's weird that businesses and that governments had more resolve. And I will say that as a person who thinks that the Trump administration's response to COVID was disastrous, I think that the messaging from the Trump camp and from Republicans in general has resulted in unnecessary deaths. I think that the messaging where they basically convinced their base to distrust any authority figure and to distrust all of this and to ask questions about everything, they basically created the environment for the anti-vax movement to get so popular, is a direct result of that administration. But it is disappointing to see that when that administration was running the show, they at least had some backbone when it came to, like, okay, let's shut down and let's get people some money. You know, we all got that check with Donnie's signature on it. I wish that that the current administration would have a little bit more resolve, and that businesses right now would have a little bit more resolve when it comes to requiring passports, especially, like, you know, concerts and theme parks and airports. Like, if you're going to be a place where, like, thousands of people are going to be there, no, you can't come in without a passport, without showing me that, like, you know. Yeah, and this is a good point. Ole Major says, it's the Congress Republicans under Biden who didn't want vax passports and shutdowns, right? Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely, like, the people that we are seeing being the most vocal about, like, we are not getting mask mandates and passport mandates. If there's anything I can do about it, it's the Republicans. But, like, it still feels like the Democrats should be flexing more muscle right now and should be saying, we don't give a fuck what you guys want, and should be trying to shove some more stuff through. You know, it's a little frustrating. Kate Brown of Oregon says, there's no political will for lockdown, says Typo Tycoon. Yeah, that's how it feels. And it's frustrating. It's really frustrating because what was the point? What was the point of giving everyone the vaccine passport if we were just going to chicken out on it? You know? Yeah, this is interesting. Valkyrie Rivers says, we've had vaccine passports and mandates for 100 years. Yeah, it's nothing new. It's nothing new. That's the other frustrating part, is that people trying to make it seem like this isn't something we've been doing for as long as vaccines have been a thing. Like, it's just this new thing that all of a sudden, you know, someone said to me in a comment section the other day, they said, name me one other vaccine that works the way this one does. Because someone, I said something about how, like, about that, about how vaccines are not new. It's not new technology. Like, and people requiring vaccines for you to participate in things is not new. And then they said, name me one other vaccine that works the way this one does. And I was like, what do you mean? And they go, name me one other vaccine that injects you with something that's like the virus so that your immune system can learn how to fight the virus off. And I was like, that's what a vaccine is. I was like, you just said what a vaccine is. They were like, name me one other vaccine that is you getting injected with the virus or a version of the virus so that your immune system can learn how to fight it off if you should become infected. And I was like, oh, that's what That's what a vaccine is. That's every vaccine. It's wild. You know, suddenly people who never knew what a vaccine was, never knew how they worked, never questioned it, never thought to find out, probably learned at some point in school, but forgot about it and never really cared. All of a sudden are really concerned about how vaccines work and are really suspicious about this very old science. It's Quell says, that's true. I still have my immunization cards from when I was a baby. And here Moror says, not passports, immunization records, but not passports that you have to show in public. I feel like that's kind of a little bit of a pedantic delineation, especially during an active pandemic. Like if we were in an active pandemic of polio, like if we were in the state where pandemic or polio was raging across the globe and people were dying by the millions of polio, we probably would have to show immunization records of polio to go around places. Like, I think that's contextually, you can see the difference there. Phantom Phil says, do we want to live in a society where we label people sick until proven healthy? Nobody's doing that. Just absolutely no one. So yeah, I guess not. But I see a lot of this from anti-vaxxers. Like so much gross mischaracterization of the argument. So many people just going like, why can't you understand that it's my choice, that I have a freedom to choose? And it's like, literally no one ever said you don't. Literally no one ever said that you can't choose. What we are trying to do is to educate you so that you make a better choice. We are trying to beg you, to implore you over and over and over again to believe the vast majority of healthcare workers and medical scientists and epidemiologists and virologists, and to take their advice and to believe the data that's coming out that shows that vaccines are effective. We are begging you to make that choice. So when you say, my body, my choice, I have a choice, you're misrepresenting the entire discussion. No one is suggesting that you shouldn't have a choice. People are saying that kind of in frustration sometimes. Sometimes it's like, God, maybe we just need to force everyone to do it because you guys won't get it, because you guys just refuse to understand it. But really, the actual argument that I see for the most part is people trying to tell you why you should make the choice to get it. And your interpretation of that is, how dare you tell me what to do? I'm not telling you what to do. I'm giving you information hoping that you will choose to do something more responsible than what you're doing, to do something smarter. Just like this thing of, do you want to live in a world where people are labeled sick until proven healthy? Literally no one is saying that. Literally no one is saying, if you can't prove to me that you're healthy, then we will label you as sick. That's not what we're doing. What we want is proof that you have taken the proper precautions to make sure that you and the other people in the space that you're going to be in will be safe. We don't know if you're sick or not. We don't know if you've got a cold, the flu. You could be coming in with, like, we don't know what your situation is. What we want to know is that you've done what you need to do and taken the precautions necessary to try to make sure that you're not endangering the other people around you. It's the exact same thing of security checks at airports. You're not guilty of a crime until, like, just by not being able to show that there's not a bomb in your shoes. Like, but you're just, there's just security measures now that we all do just to sort of like all agree, like, okay, cool. If this is what I need to do to get on the plane, to make sure that everyone feels safe, to make sure that everyone knows that. And I'll agree. TSA security is largely theater. I think it's hilarious that, that my little tube of toothpaste could be could potentially be an explosive, but it's somehow rendered not dangerous if I put it in a Ziploc bag. I will never, for as long as I live, understand that one. I'll never understand it. I'll never understand how my hair gel is an explosive, but if I put it in a Ziploc, if it's in a Ziploc bag, then it's safe. I don't get that one. But yeah, this whole thing of. You're intentionally misrepresenting the argument so that it sounds like what's being proposed is unreasonable. Yeah, Garden Gnomes says, if your choice is to not get vaxxed, you do not get the same access to the community, period. Yeah, exactly. It's like the concept of like choices having consequences is totally lost on these people. It's always, I have a choice. I have the right to choose. And it's like, yeah, of course. Of course. And there are consequences to your choices. That's it. That's it. And especially like in the context of this specific situation, it seems like they always want to divorce it from the immediate context of this situation, which is millions of people are dying from a preventable illness, and there are measures you can take to help slow that down, and you're refusing to do it. That is this. That is the context of what is happening. And then you hear from people like that, that we're shaming them, that we're guilting them, that we're making them feel bad. That by saying, that by pointing out that like their choice is contributing to ICUs being overrun and to more people dying, they're like, well, don't shame me for my choice. You should be shamed for that choice. For the simple fact that that there are places in the world where the pandemic basically is over. Where like New Zealand. Someone mentioned Denmark earlier in the chat. But that's happened because they've taken the necessary steps. They didn't freak out when they were asked to wear masks and social distance. And when the vaccine became available, they went out and got it. And now they're pretty much done. They've been able to move on. But we can't move on because of the choices that you're making. And when we point that out and you feel bad, your response is, don't shame me. Don't make me feel bad. You should feel bad. And the fact that you say, don't shame me, is just proof that you do feel bad. That when I say this, when I point out that you're part of the problem, that you're part of the reason people are dying right now unnecessarily, it causes you to feel bad about that choice, and rightly so. I made a video about this on TikTok, but I'm ranting about it on the podcast now. Anyway, I had a feeling I might get a little heated on the show today with this subject matter. We got a little bit away from the whole like conspiracy theory thing or like response to trauma, but I think it's all wrapped in there. Just talking about the ways that people respond to massive, you know, society changing, society rupturing, society shaking events. It's so interesting to see the solemnity 20 years later for 9/11, to see how many people are still, who are kind of performatively saying like, wow. And those same people couldn't give a shit about what's happening right now. Because their right to make a choice about what they want to do is more important than someone else's right to not die from a preventable illness. Phantom Phil just said, I have natural immunity from catching the Rona, which is why I don't want the vaccine. All right, this is the last thing I'm going to talk about. Then we're going to end the podcast. First of all, people in the medical community have said over and over and over again that your natural immunity is not the same as a vaccine. It's not. The natural antibodies that you may or may not have as a result of contracting the coronavirus are not the same as getting a vaccine. So just putting that out there. Second of all, millions of people have died relying on their natural immunity. I see this a lot. People talking about their natural immunity, how we have an immune system for a reason. Millions of people have died relying on natural immunity. So just putting that out there again. And third of all, I am really, really honestly flabbergasted by the sheer amount of people in my comments who say some version of what you just said, who say, I had it. Me and my wife had it. Me and my whole family had it. And we were fine. It was just a bad cold. I've had people say, like, I've had it four times. I've had people in my comments be like, I've had it four times and I was fine every time. And I'm like, you are inferring the incorrect data from what happened to you. The fact that you have had this virus that is going around that everyone is worried about four times and your takeaway isn't, holy shit, this is real. This is real. Holy shit, I got this shit four times in a year, in 1 year. And it's because I was going around with no mask on and not social distancing. I was doing whatever I wanted. I was going to barbecues. I was going to concerts. I was going to parties. And I got that shit four times. God, they must not be lying. They were right. But instead, your takeaway is, I got it four times, so I guess it's not a big deal. How is that your takeaway? That will baffle me till the day I die. That you got I have not had it, you guys. My partner and I have largely over the last 18 months been inside of our apartment. We have spent more time inside of our apartment than I think I've ever spent inside in my entire life. We go out, we do stuff. We go to the movies now. We go to dinner with friends. We see family when I'm visiting Utah. We go out occasionally, but more often than not, we're masked up if we're outside, and more like for the majority of the last 18 months, we've been inside, and neither one of us has had COVID. That's the data that I got, is that I masked up, I socially distanced, I got vaccinated, and I haven't had it. If you've had it, if you know several people who have had it, if your whole family got it multiple times, the takeaway is not, oh, I guess no big deal. The takeaway is, holy shit, it must be real. If people told me that if you go out in the sun without sunscreen on, you can get skin cancer, and I said, yeah, right, I'll take my chances, and then I fucked around and found out, and I went out into the sun without sunscreen on, and I got melanoma, and then they were able to, like, cut out the mole or whatever and just do a simple, like, procedure and cut that mole out of my skin, my takeaway wouldn't be, see, all those idiots don't know what they're talking about. I got the melanoma, and I was fine. My takeaway would be, oh, they were right. You know what? I fucked around, and I found out. Even if I didn't get badly sick from it, the fact that they were right, the fact that like, I did the thing that they told me not to do, and it resulted in me getting sick, should tell me, oh, I guess that all the doctors that said that I could get cancer from being in the sun without sunscreen were not lying. Just because I didn't die from it doesn't mean that the millions of people who have died don't matter. You know? It's so crazy to me the amount of people in my comments who are like, I got it. I got it three times. And the only thing that happened is my smell and my taste went away. Still haven't recovered those two senses, but it's fine. And I'm like, you lost two of your five senses? Two of your five major ways that you experience consciousness? And that's no big deal to you? Wow. Like, what? And your takeaway is to cut you, and you're coming into my comments saying, no big deal. I just had a hard time breathing for a couple weeks, and now I can't smell or taste for the rest of my life. And I probably can't go on a jog for the rest of my life because I still have a hard time breathing. No big deal. That should not be your takeaway. Even if it was just a mild cold for you, your takeaway from having had the thing that is going around should not be, oh, I guess it's no big deal. Your takeaway should be, holy shit, it's real. All right, that's the last thing I'm going to say. I think we've thoroughly covered this on my TikTok page and on my podcast, but I just was thinking about it. You know, we are currently experiencing another massively societally traumatic event that's going to traumatize people for years to come. People are going to have the scars of this pandemic for decades. We're going to talk about the images that we saw on TV. We're going to talk about where we were when it first started to happen. We're going to talk about the first responders who put their lives in harm's way to save people. We're going to talk about it the same way that we talk about these other events. And just ask yourself, if you're one of the people who's kind of not getting involved and being a part of the problem, like, do you really think that that history is going to look back at this and vindicate you? I don't know. Thanks for the comments, everybody. Thanks for participating, especially the people who disagreed with me. I actually really appreciate your point of view. It helps with the conversation, genuinely. So thank you. Thanks, Sweet Mama Jay, for moderating and being here. Thanks, friends, for being here. I really appreciate everyone being here. Stick around. Maybe we can chat for a little while longer after I hit stop on the old recorder over here. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, looking me up on Apple Music or Spotify. All of my music is mixed and mastered by my good friend, my best friend, Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Chris also mixes and masters this show. Go to themarmalademusic.com and tell Chris that you're a massive fan of his work over here on the podcast, and he will give you 20% off of your first audio project. It's that simple. You tell Chris that you heard his work on the People Pleaser podcast or on Austin Archer's music, and you love his work, and he will give you 20% off your first project. Okay, that's it. That's the show. Please, 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 if you are within earshot of my voice and you have not gotten vaccinated yet, and you are able to, and you are able to get vaccinated, please consider doing it. Okay. All right. Love you. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.